Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Hello, Doctor.
Good morning, Seb. How you doing?
Well, you know, every week on the program, you always have somebody that's listening in some far-off spot of the country or the world, and they offer different suggestions for stories and everything. Do you have any of that this morning?
I do have a cousin down in Utah, Renee. She listens quite often. And
hello, Renee.
Hello, Renee. So, yeah, but that's about it for this week.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Some of the suggestions that we do get on occasion regard both of us leaving.
That's true, but we're hanging in there. That's true. Yeah.
What are we going to talk about this morning?
Okay, Zeb, if I say the gunfight at the OK Corral, give me some names. Is there a name that comes right to the top?
I guess initially it would be Wyatt Earp and his brothers, and it would be the Clantons, and it would be Ike Clanton, for instance. And also one that is overlooked, and that's Doc Holliday.
Yep. Okay, well, you hit the nail on the head, Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
So that's who we're going to talk about. Now, I'm going to show you a picture of Wyatt Earp in his later years. Now, you take a look at this picture.
Does
he look like kind of a...
He looks very dignified.
And maybe shrewd, maybe kind of no-nonsense kind of guy.
Well, he was that.
He was, and we're going to talk about
that. Okay, go ahead.
So,
What about his brothers? Did you ever get a family photo of them?
I don't know that I've ever seen one.
One someplace. I'll dig that out.
Well, Wyatt Earp, you know, has been the controversial subject of various books and articles for years. And biographers and other writers have described at length his early years as a lawman in Dodge City, Kansas. And, of course, the famous gunfight near the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona Territory. And that was in 1881. Although noted as in many of the Earp books, his years in San Diego, California, in the 1880s, did not get very much attention. Did you know that he was in San Diego?
Well, he went, didn't he? Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he go from Tombstone to San Diego?
I'm not sure if he went from Tombstone, but that could be correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to talk about that. So Earp and his wife, Josephine, whom he called Sadie, arrived.
Now, that was his second wife, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They arrived somewhere between about 1885, 1887, and the gunfight was 1881, so, you know, a few years later.
Right.
But the exact date is open to debate. However, Earp's biographer, Stuart Lake, said that the former deputy U.S. Marshal came to San Diego about 1886. And here's what Earp said, we made friends in San Diego who remained to us for years afterwards, but only a few are living today. Wyatt's wife later recalled, quote, one of these, Miss Eliza Burns, I still visit occasionally. It was in the home of her mother that we had our first living quarters in the city.
Hmm.
So that's where they first lived when they got there.
Okay.
Now, this house allegedly stood next to a Wells Fargo & Company office, and it's believed by some that Earp worked for years as a Wells Fargo undercover agent. And it is known that, like his brother Morgan, he served as a Wells Fargo armed guard after his arrival in Tombstone in 1879.
Hmm.
Now, there's little evidence to explain why the Earps chose to go to San Diego when they did. Nonetheless, it's probable that Wyatt changed his residence because his brother Virgil and Virgil's wife Elvira were living in San Diego, and they probably encouraged Wyatt to join them. Now, Virgil had a job. He was director of something called the Old Silvergate Athletic Club. And Wyatt had always liked San Diego. And when we went there to visit Virgil and his wife, we decided to locate there. And that's what his wife, Josephine,
said.
Well,
what brother was killed in Tombstone? I can't remember his name.
Let's see. Got it here.
You've got it. Well, you're doing...
I'll look at that later.
I'll tell you what. Let me do a quick commercial for Burley Vet, and you look that up.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're very honored to have Dr. Scott Morley and his entire staff at Burley Veterinary Hospital sponsor this segment with Dr. History. And I'll tell you what, they really care about your animals. Large animals, small animals. I suggest that you go in there today or give them a call, make an appointment. Absolutely. They have ambulatory services for larger animal services, and they offer aftercare for all emergencies. They are, and they specify this, they are your family veterinarian, and they treat your animals great and small. Take care of your animals. Take them in to Burley Veterinary Hospital, 2869 Overland, 678-5509. Did you notice I bit my tongue again during the middle of that commercial? That's twice in one day.
You know, maybe you'll get this someday, Zed.
Okay.
So Virgil was shot. This was after the gunfight. Virgil was shot and seriously wounded, but he lived. But the following March, Morgan was killed.
That's it. Morgan.
Unnamed gunman.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
So anyway, you know, as much as he cared for his older brother Virgil, why would Wyatt Earp, without doubt a man of action, elect to go to this kind of sleepy Oceanside border town? And in 1885, San Diego was kind of woken up from its just quiet.
Now you're having the same trouble I had.
Yeah. It waked up by the arrival of the California trains. And then it became a city, you know, it had a really good climate. Wyatt received news of the beginning of the land boom and decided to cash in on the speculation in real estate, which saw property values rise dramatically as the population increased. Right then, it was about 5,000 people in 1885, and in 2 years, rose to 40,000 people in
wow.
San Diego.
Wouldn't you like to have owned a lot of property there?
You know, and it is a nice place. We used to go down there every winter to visit my in-laws.
Yeah.
And very good climate, you know. But Wyatt was kind of an opportunist, and he invested heavily in prime real estate, buying property in what they call the Hillcrest section of the city, and Earp's property on a place called Washington University. He had a place downtown. It was 150 by 150 feet that he had enclosed with a five-foot fence. In downtown San Diego, Wyatt owned a lot of the at the corner of Beach and Union Streets, and people that are familiar with that would know better than I.
Did you ever ask yourself, as a historian, where he got all the money for investments? He sure didn't make it off of being a sheriff.
No, that's a good question. Probably borrowed from banks.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, so that lot that he got was part of a block where the U.S. Grant Hotel, built in 1910 by Ulysses S. Grant Jr. to honor his father, is now located. Now, in addition, Wyatt either owned or more likely leased at least three saloons and gambling halls in San Diego. And these properties include one called the Oyster Bar and another one called the Gambling Hall. And it said that the bar was one of the better known and frequented saloon gambling halls in the city. And it may have been partly his name, you know.
I see.
So, but historically known as a man who engaged in the business of gambling, it's not surprising that Wyatt reportedly ran the highest stakes faro game at a gambling hall in the whole town.
Wow.
Now, another popular place of business in which he had an interest was a saloon across from a place called the Horton Plaza, which is right downtown San Diego, right next to the ocean there. Besides buying and selling urban real estate and operating gambling halls, Wyatt owned racehorses, including a string of harness horses, and he also refereed boxing matches during his stay in San Diego. In 1890, he reportedly worked as a referee in a fight between a guy named Billy Graham of San Francisco and Jack Sullivan of Oceanside.
Oh, my.
Now, I hadn't heard of those guys. But
I have. Jack Sullivan, sure.
Oh, yeah. So later, Earp would referee the controversial bout at San Francisco's Mechanics Pavilion between the legendary heavyweight Bob Fitzsimmons and Tom Sharkey, and that was in 1896. Now, during this confrontation, Wyatt was arrested for carrying a concealed weapon into the ring and was accused of rendering a flagrantly unfair decision in favor of Sharkey.
Really?
So you can bet who he was betting.
He had his money on Sharkey.
Yeah. But when not officiating at boxing matches or overseeing his gambling operations, Earp developed a local reputation as a person who allegedly was kind to animals and children. There was an 88-year-old boy, his name was Clarence Rand, recalled an occasion when Wyatt dined at his mother's boarding house and allowed this young boy to handle his impressive weapons after the cartridges had been removed.
Uh-oh.
Rand later said, quote, "Thought that was something great to be holding one of those big six guns." Can you imagine?
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, this legend. But Earp lived in San Diego when the wild and infamous Stingray district of the city was chock full of alcohol, gambling, opium use. And in fact, the district resembled in many ways the more widely known area in San Francisco called the Barbary Coast.
Oh, yeah.
During the late 19th century. So, in fact, one police officer said, quote, "The notorious gunmen, the Earp brothers, Virgil and Wyatt of Tombstone, Arizona fame, were probably most prominent among the gambling fraternity."
How old were he and Virgil when they were in California?
Well, he lived quite a few years after this. So I don't know, but I'm going to say maybe 60s.
I was going to say
50s.
Yeah, 60s, yeah.
But the Earp brothers played a significant role in promoting such sports as boxing matches and every form of gambling, and even in down in Tijuana, Mexico. In fact, he refereed a boxing event in 1888 in Tijuana, billed as the, quote, "the great 100-round boxing match." However, the contest only lasted about six rounds before somebody got knocked out.
So 94 rounds less.
Yeah, probably some disappointed people watching.
Yeah.
But it said that Wyatt refereed at least 30 fights in the San Diego-Tijuana area and earned a pretty good reputation as an official.
Yeah.
Now, the San Diego real estate boom had begun to collapse in the spring of 1888. Credit tightened and numbers of land speculators had to offer their holdings for sale to pay off creditors. Their desperate need to sell forced prices down, and land values just went down through the bottom because they'd been artificially inflated by speculation, you know. But the sudden boost followed the great boom caused 10,000 people to leave town in just a few months in 1888. So here you've got San Diego. You got houses that were empty all over San Diego. Public and private improvement works were stopped. Unemployment became a severe problem. And as credit and jobs vanished, some of the businessmen and remaining residents tried to salvage what they could by actually starting fire to their businesses in hope of collecting insurance.
The insurance money.
Right.
Oh, my.
But that came to a halt when they started arresting people for this.
Yeah.
So remember I said that it got up to 40,000 people. By 1890, they were down to 16,000. So, you know.
So San Diego was never a city that always was appreciating. It had its devaluation
for
a while, too.
It started low, went high, and then came back down. But
that's
by
so
1896, Wyatt had gradually sold most of his local properties and investments, but he had not been able to locate everything he owned. In fact, he had some property that he owned, and he gave this to a widow just because of the goodness of his heart.
Really?
Just gave this to, But he did prosper. He actually made a lot of money with his saloons and his gambling halls when things were really going well.
So he left virtually the law enforcement end of it when he left Tombstone.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like I say, he did very well financially during those years. Now, according to some sources, Wyatt first acquired trotting horses while in San Diego. And his acquisitions constitute the beginning of a period of 10 years during which he and Josephine traveled the Western racehorse circuit with a small stable of horses. Earp's wife proclaimed that both she and Wyatt fell in love with the so-called, quote, "sport of kings." Trotters.
Wasn't she an opera singer?
I don't know that.
I think she was. His second wife, I believe, was either a touring theater singer or opera singer.
Could have been.
Yeah.
I don't know that. But in San Diego, Wyatt began his racing career at the place called the former Turf Club in Pacific Beach. And before taking his horses to tracks in Los Angeles, San Francisco, he raced at Tijuana and Escondido. And occasionally, Earp drove his own sulky. These
really?
Rubber-tired little...
Yeah, the sulky racers. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And he actually won a race. So that looks like kind of a dangerous sport. You know.
Well, have you ever ridden a sulky?
I have not.
I have. Years ago. And and let's just say that you're looking right into the south end of a northbound horse, and it's not a pleasant trip.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Now, it's not known precisely when Wyatt and Josephine left San Diego. He remained in the city until about 1888, as long as the money was rolling in. And at the same time, Earp continued to own property in San Diego well into the mid-1890s. On February 1st, 1894, the San Diego Union reported that Wyatt was sued for non-payment of a promissory note, although he maintained business interests in San Diego. By 1891, he'd moved up and was living actually up in San Francisco. But while Wyatt traveled extensively up and down the Pacific coast from San Francisco to Seattle with his racing horse interests and work actually as a bodyguard and boxing referee, he did not abruptly sever his ties with San Diego. In 1908, you know, years later, he and others actually filed a case in the Superior Court against the city of San Diego. The suit asserted that land belonging to Earp and other people was wrongfully sold for taxes. So he still had property clear down there.
Mm.
Now, as late as 1923...
He's got to be up in his 80s or 90s.
I'm thinking he's got to be. Well, actually, it does.
Yeah.
In 1923, 6 years before his death, in Los Angeles at age 80, so he lived to be 86.
Yeah.
On January 13th, 1929, Earp visited Coronado on San Diego Bay. Now, you've been down there,
yep.
San Diego.
Yep.
And on Coronado's Long Beach, known as the Silver Strand, a popular tent city had developed for vacationers who couldn't afford rooms in this, you know, that beautiful white wooden hotel called mm-hmm. the Hotel mm-hmm. Del Coronado. That
You're
is
right.
an amazing place just to walk through. And that had been built in 1888. But Wyatt apparently strolled the Silver Strand playing cards with anybody he could find. And allegedly, whenever a overly aggressive or frustrated gambler became a bit of a nuisance or a threat, Earp would personally intervene and restore order with his aging but still agile fists, or perhaps by the impact of his notorious but not yet legendary reputation.
I see.
So he was still commanded respect.
You know, the guy is amazing because, number one, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that through all the so-called gunfights and all the bullets that were fired at him, he was never hit.
Never hit. No.
Never hit.
No. Uh-uh. Now, considering the fact that Wyatt Earp's San Diego years are mentioned only briefly in some of these biographies, it's important to note that Earp resided and conducted business in the city and its outlying area from 1886 until about 1890.
Yeah.
So his impact on San Diego was not equal to his reputation in Dodge City or Tombstone, but he nonetheless created a reputation and a public presence that was remembered after he left and is actually commemorated today in a place called the Wyatt Earp Room of the Gas Lamp Museum of Historic San Diego.
I didn't
now,
know that.
I'm going to have to look that up next time I go to San Diego.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know there was a gas lamp museum. And it actually contains some of his memorabilia, some of his stuff that he
Whatever happened to Virgil?
I'm not sure.
I see.
I'm not sure. But Wyatt Earp always associated most vividly and graphically with Tombstone. And still, there's a lot of mining camps in Colorado, Idaho, Nevada, and other western towns and cities, including San Diego, that can legitimately claim that Earp lived and worked there. In fact, in San Diego, Wyatt was respected as being an entrepreneur. You know, he went in there and bought up this property. And like I said, he made a lot of money. But he acquired a small fortune during his relatively brief residence in the city. But his business activity in San Diego kind of contrasts with his more celebrated and controversial law enforcement role in Dodge City
and
Tombstone.
Did he and Josephine ever have any children?
I believe they did.
I wonder if there's any descendants, I'm sure there are, of some of the Earp brothers, Virgil or Wyatt or whatever.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting to try to get them on the program?
Right. Now, there was Virgil, Morgan, James, Newton, and Warren.
Okay, now, Morgan was killed, I believe.
Is that what I said? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was shot to death.
Yeah. Virgil got shot, but survived. Morgan was killed, and... In fact, they hunted for the culprits, and Wyatt and his gang actually killed several suspects.
Yeah.
But then they decided to leave town.
I wonder how we could do some investigatory work, sleuthing, if you will, and try to find if there are any members of the Earp family still either on the West Coast or back in the Midwest.
You know, there's got to be, with all those brothers and, you know, with marriages and kids and stuff, but... You know, some people, you know, you can portray Wyatt Earp as a good guy or a hero or maybe a bad guy.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have to rely on just whatever we read about, you know, and from people that were around them.
One final thought. I've only got 30 seconds left, but I thought that he and Josephine, after they were married, they went to Alaska for a while.
They did, and I actually did a story on that.
That's what I thought.
Quite a long time ago. Yeah. He went up there and spent... I'm thinking 2 or 3 years up there.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And I believe he had a saloon up there as well.
Bingo.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That was good. I enjoyed it. But, you know, really, to enhance what you said a couple of months ago, we need to find if there's anybody out there in the audience that knows members of perhaps the family tree.
Yeah.
In this case, the Earp family.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting to have them come on the program?
Yeah, because they would have really the more up-to-date information about the family.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I appreciate that.